And good morning. Welcome to Community Voice. I'm your host, Josh Engel. Apologies there. A little technical difficulties. Happy Monday. It's Monday. It's going to happen. Good morning, everyone. Today's Monday, March 24th, and the time is 8:30. Very, very pleased to have composer, conductor, and pianist Terry Lowry has served as the conductor and music director of the Carroll Symphony Orchestra since its founding in 2002. He also leads the Carrollton Jazz Orchestra, the Carrollton Wind Ensemble, the Carrollton Community Chorus, and the Carrollton Youth String Orchestra. I have no idea how he has time for all of that, but he does, and a lot more. He is the organist and music director of St. Timothy's Episcopal Church in Atlanta. His concert career has spanned four decades and has taken him to many of the great cities and concert halls all over North America and Europe. An active recording artist, his music can be heard on all of the major streaming platforms. In 2012, he co-founded the online community musical Overture and continues to serve as its chairman, the executive producer of the award-winning film Hear Us, which came out in 2018, and as well as producer of over 50 episodes of the syndicated radio program The Hymn of the Week with Larry Frazier. Captain Lowry serves in the Georgia State Defense Force as executive officer of the band, and he lives with his wife Tara and their five children in Carrollton. Good morning, Terry. How are you?
Morning, Josh. How you doing?
Very, very well. That was that introduction was provided by a big fan of yours, Steve Graddick, our boss, who was supposed to be hosting this morning, but unfortunately, he was detained. He was not able to host this morning, so I'm very pleased to be hanging out with you today. So we have a concert coming up this Friday, the Carrollton Jazz Ensemble. Before we get into that, into the niches there and the details, let's talk a bit about the Carrollton Jazz Orchestra.
Happy to. So, the Carrollton Jazz Orchestra started, I don't know, 6-7 years ago as one of the bands or ensembles in residence at the Carrollton Center for the Arts. So we rehearse there most Sunday afternoons and perform about a dozen concerts a year throughout the state. We do usually 5 or 6 concerts in Carrollton, and then we play all over Georgia throughout the year. And it started out, you know, a bunch of guys who maybe they played in jazz bands in college or maybe high school and just wanted to get together and play some jazz. And my good friend Huck Smith helped me start this band. Actually, I should probably give Huck credit for starting the band. I helped Huck. There you go. That's the better way to do it. I helped Huck start this band. And Huck had this philosophy that if we pick out music that really great jazz players will want to play, then the really great jazz players will come to Carrollton and play.
Build it, they will come.
And man, he was right. He was absolutely right. Of course, you know, Huck, people don't know this, but Huck has the attorney, you know, has a music degree. Yeah, he went to the Berklee College of Music in Boston for a year in jazz, finished his degree at Jack State, was a band director, and then decided to go to law school. So he's a...
Did he have a focus in any particular instrument?
Oh, trombone.
Oh, wow.
Huck is a heck of a trombone player. Huck was the first trombone in the Carrollton Jazz Orchestra for years.
Wow.
Yeah, heck of a player. And yeah, we had a great time starting this band. And he was right. You know, we started picking out music that, you know, maybe most local swing bands didn't play. And I guess that's kind of an important point. That a lot of people don't really get, because, you know, we're a big band, which means the instrumentation is generally 5 saxophones up front, 4 or 5 trombones in the middle, 4 or 5 trumpets on the back row, and a rhythm section of piano, guitar, upright bass, and drum set. Well, that instrumentation, you know, that takes you know, all the way from Duke Ellington to Count Basie to Thad Jones, but also Glenn Miller and Tommy Dorsey and some of the more, really more kind of 1940s pop. I mean, there were some jazz elements in the stuff that they did, but I think it would be more accurate to say that they were swing bands. They were dance bands.
It's what I think when I think Glenn Miller.
Yeah. I mean, it's great music. I mean, I love that music, but it's not really what jazz lovers call jazz. You know, and that's a whole topic, and we might have fun talking about genres and how that all came about. It's a kind of a silly process and a silly world, you know, to try to come up with these labels for different kinds of music, but it facilitates the conversation, so we'll go with it. But, you know, there are a lot of those little swing bands around that play kind of the World War II pop music, like, you know, In the Mood and Sentimental Journey and, you know, the, String of Pearls. Great music. Again, great
incredible
music.
Music.
But it's, you know, it's not hardcore jazz, you know. And so if we could play the music that that maybe is not getting played a lot, Huck's idea was that the really great players would make the trip to Carrollton and come play with us. And but still, we're, you know, half the band lives in Carrollton, you know, and these are jazzers that went to West Georgia. Dan Bacos had such a great jazz program for so long here in Carrollton, and he produced a lot of great players, and some of them are in our band. Three of them are in our band right now, and yeah, so we built on that, and over the years, this jazz band has just really turned into something special. We had this guy, he was retired military, and by the way, a lot of our players are retired military because Army jazz bands kind of kept this genre going forever. They were the only place where there, where you knew you could find a really high quality jazz band were these Army bands. So a lot of retired Army guys are in our band. And one of them was a saxophone player, tenor sax player, Bob Boyce. Lives down in just outside Noonan. Fantastic sax player. Well, Bob had picked up the bass and was wanting to play bass. And so he calls it and he says, you know, I'll come up and play bass with you. And at the time, I didn't know him and I didn't know what a killer sax player he was. But I had this guy that knew what he was doing and was willing to come up. And Bob played bass. And our good friend Mariano Pacetti, who had taught at the University of West Georgia, tenor sax player, was our lead tenor player. And Mar was such a sweetheart, great, great guy. He passed away a few years ago. But he played lead tenor and did a fantastic job. And Bob played bass and we rocked along and had a great time. Well, Mar got sick and he wasn't able to play with us. And so Bob agreed to move over to the lead tenor spot and blew us all away. It's like, man, you've been holding out on us. This is, you know, I mean, obviously he's a pro. It's his whole career. You know, it's been his whole military career as a lead tenor player and you know, Army jazz bands, which are professional jazz bands. So, of course, he was amazing. So we had to find a bass player. And I called up my good friend, Tony McCutcheon, who at the time was the head of the music department at Jack State and an incredible drummer. And I said, Tony, I need to find a bass player. And he said, you got to call this guy named Chris Inghauser. He's over in Athens, teaches at a lot of the colleges and gigs all the time. He said, best bass player I've ever worked with. So this was at the beginning of COVID where everybody else was shutting down and we figured out a way to keep it going. We started rehearsing at the amp outside. So we kept the jazz band going through COVID. So if these guys wanted to play, they were at very limited options. So Chris agreed to come over and play with us. And when Chris came and played, it changed the band. All of a sudden, we went from a group of really fine players, you know, Sunday afternoon players, to, holy smokes, this could be a really fantastic professional band that we could charge money for. You know, we could play all over.
Absolutely.
So that kind of changed everything when Chris joined the band. And so from then on, the personnel just, you know, when somebody would have to stop playing for whatever reason, the next player that came in was a pro. And when somebody else had to stop playing for whatever reason, the next person that came in was a pro. And it's just kind of built that way to where now it's, I mean, it is as good as any jazz band you're going to hear in the Southeast. I mean, it's just really, really a great band. That I can't say enough about these players and how fantastic they are. So, yeah, we're going to play Friday night. We're going to play maybe my favorite program that we're one of them. I mean, I say that every time we play, right? Because I say, hey, this is my favorite music in the world. But, of course, I say that because I picked it out. And if I'm going to spend, you know, several months working on a program, obviously I'm going to enjoy it. But I'm really pumped about this program. I think it's probably the best mix of the music that players want to play and the music that people want to hear that we've ever done. We're going to play some Count Basie. We're going to play some tunes that a lot of tunes people know. We're going to play My Funny Valentine. We're going to play Satin Doll. We're going to play Art Blakey's Moanin'. We're going to do Quincy Jones' arrangement of Moanin', which is fantastic. We're going to play Birdland. You know, just stuff that people, a lot of stuff that people will know. And, but the true jazz lovers are going to flip out too. We've developed an audience of people who have a record collection with 3,000, you know, jazz CDs, and they sit at home when they listen on their headphones because they don't know, you know, that there's a big community of jazz lovers out there. They think they're the only one, so they've got their collection at home and they enjoy it. And then they've learned to come out and hear the Carolyn Jazz Orchestra, and they look around and they see 250 other jazz lovers just like them, and they didn't know because they don't talk.
Smoked them out.
Yeah. Right. You go out in public and you're talking about other things. No, you're talking about events of the day, or if you start talking about culture, it's generally pop culture because, you know, it's a safer topic because more people are going to know, you know, X TV show or X movie or whatever in mainstream popular culture. So you don't always bring out the little niche things that you're really into, especially if you think you're the only one that's into it. And then you come out and realize that there's a whole room full of people here. I mean, a concert hall full of people who are into this, and we're all here to hear this fantastic band doing live what we were just listening to on our headphones. And so we've kind of got this following, and, you know, we'll play the amp and there'll be 300 or 400 people at the amp.
Yeah, it packs it out.
It packs out the amp. And we sell out the Center for the Arts every time we play. We have regular gigs. I mean, the Canton Theater up in Canton booked us for 4 shows last year throughout the year. I mean, we're playing, you know, another
packed
round of shows
too
this year. We've played in Gainesville. We played the Boot Barn up in Gainesville. We had 800 people there. Yeah, so we play all over the state. And it's just become a fun, fun thing. And something that me, Mr. Classical Piano, never dreamed I would be a part of. And so it's been a fantastic ride for me, and I appreciate my good buddy Huck getting me into this.
Time is 8:42. We're going to go ahead and take our first commercial break. But when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with composer and conductor Terry Lowry as we talk about this Friday's Carrollton Jazz Orchestra concert. Don't miss it. Community Voice brought to you by Tanner Health System and Oak Mountain Academy.
The customized academic scholar journey at Oak Mountain Academy is individually designed to provide students with a personalized, clearly defined academic track that earns the student a series of distinctions upon graduation. This journey enables academically driven students to pursue a focused, rigorous course of study personalized to their wants and desires. I'm Patrick Uran, head of school, inviting you to journey with us on the mountain. For more information, visit us at oakmountain.us. Discover your journey at OMA. Prepare, explore, and achieve.
Consider the Mobius strip. Take a strip of paper, twist it, connect the ends. This connection forms a continuous loop. Seamless, infinite. That's how your healthcare should be too. At Tanner Health, the Mobius is our symbol and our promise, representing our continuum of care and our commitment that the services you need will be here for you always. We're not just changing healthcare, we're redefining it. See more at tanner.org.
And we're back to Community Voice, Monday, March 24th. Time is 8:44 a.m. I'm your host, Josh Engel, and we're talking with composer and conductor Terry Lowry as we chat about this Friday's upcoming Carrollton Jazz Orchestra concert, 7:30 p.m. at the Center for the Arts right here in Carrollton. Well, actually, let's just jump into it right now. Before we flesh out a bit more about the pieces that are going to be covered. You're able to tease those a bit in the last segment. I really would desperately love to take a step back and just in terms of theory, maybe piece apart how you were speaking earlier about labels and genres and how these things split. There seemed to be significance regarding the year 1948 in terms of jazz taking its form. Would you please enlighten us, educate us on that?
Yeah, you guys really ought to have an online version of the show that includes what happens during the breaks, the conversations that happen during the
breaks.
Seriously. It's probably more interesting than the stuff that makes it to the air. So, yeah, during the break, you asked me a question about the genres and all that, and I just said, well, you know, 1948. And your eyes kind of got wide.
So
like,
ominous.
Oh, man, something happened in 1948. Well, I mean, if you think about it, it's a silly idea to have these labels for different kinds of music, right? Humans have this propensity to divide the world into us versus them in a bazillion different ways, you know, and that's what politics is all about, right? Let's curate them so that we can be the us and we can somehow be scared of the them and we can all, you know, whatever. We all get tired of hearing about it all the time. But that happens with music too. If you know, I sometimes say if you could press the mute button on the world where you couldn't hear anything at all, right? But you could see, and you went to this giant field, and at this giant field, there were four stages set up with a crowd of people standing in front of each stage, the audience for each. And you don't know what's playing, right? You can't hear the kind of music that's coming from each stage. But at one stage, it's got in front of it, everybody there is wearing blue jeans and cowboy hats and boots. Okay? At the next stage, people are wearing sneakers and chains around their neck and a lot of athletic sportswear. Maybe the hats are on sideways, that kind of thing. And at the next stage, everybody's wearing tuxedos and evening gowns. And at the next stage, people are wearing all black with silver chains and black makeup on around their eyes and all this. You could tell, I mean, you know, right, what kind of music's being played.
Yeah, country, hip-hop, big band jazz orchestra, or possibly a goth music.
That's right, exactly right. Congratulations, you won you got a 100 on the quiz. So I've always felt like a lot of people pick the kind of music that they listen to based on which one of those groups they want to be a part of. If you want to be associated with this group of people, then you listen to the kind of music that group of people listen to. So that when you hang out with your friends, you know the songs they're listening to. You know, I know I see my kids do it. You know, they want to be up and in the know, and they want to keep up with current trends so that when their friends mention their next big song by Taylor Swift or whatever, they know it. They've already heard it. They're not in the dark, right? They want to stay up on what's going on for their social group. And music plays a big role in that. All popular culture plays a big role in that. And so musical genres, and I'm always going to say it with that tone of voice, genres, as you can tell that I think it's stupid, is part of, you know, self-identification in some ways. Well, there's this great story about Wilhelm Furtwängler. Wilhelm Furtwängler is one of my favorite conductors in all of history. He was the primary conductor of the Berlin Philharmonic before World War II. And he stayed in Germany during World War II. Because he knew that if he left, that all the Jewish players in his orchestra would have been killed. And he stayed and protected them. He saved a lot of lives. He got a lot of people out. You know, people who were married to Jews were arrested. And, you know, so he stayed and protected them. He never joined the Nazi party. There's this very famous photo of a concert that the Berlin Philharmonic was forced to do for the Nazi leadership. Hitler, at the end of it, you see the photo, there's a standing ovation. Hitler and Himmler and Goebbels are all there on the front row standing and clapping, and Furtwängler standing on stage, and you see the swastikas all on the stage, and Furtwängler famously refuses to give the Heil Hitler sign. I mean, that was a big deal back then. That just that could have gotten him arrested. But he never joined the party. But nonetheless, after the war, the Allies forced him to give up his position, and they forced him to go through a denazification process, even though he never joined the party. And it's funny, they replaced him with a guy named Herbert von Karajan, who did join the Nazi party. This is weird, but there's a whole other story there. Karajan was great, too, though. A great conductor. So Furtwängler was sent to Switzerland for 2 years, had to take these classes and read these books and take, you know, all these interviews, and just had to basically stay out of Germany for a while. He wasn't allowed to go back into 1948. Well, in 1948, the long play record was introduced. Now, that's important because before 1948, you could only buy these, what we think of as like 45s. It was a short form, you know, 4.5 minute record. That's why pop songs are 4 minutes now, because that's all you could fit on one disc, right? So that's why songs are as long as they are. Well, when the long play record came out, and suddenly you could put 17 minutes of music on one side, that meant that, well, you could do an entire movement of a Beethoven symphony, flip it over, do the second movement, have a third record, a second record, third side, do the third movement, flip it, do the fourth. So now you could actually have big, long pieces of music that you could sell. Well, that freaked out the orchestra world. And there was a strike for 2 years. Every orchestra in America went on strike. And they said, we're not going to play until we come to a resolution with the record industry about these long play records, because we fear that long play records are going to mean the end of going to concerts. Every time there's new technology, we all think concerts are going away, and somehow concerts still end up being the biggest thing there is. So the Association of Record Companies entered into a deal with the American Federation of Musicians, the Musicians Union, and came up with something called the Music Performance Fund, which is still exists today. And in a nutshell, there's a percentage of every recording that was ever sold that went toward this Music Performance Fund. So every Beatles record, every Elvis record, every Michael Jackson record, a percentage of that went into this Music Performance Fund, which distributes money to orchestras to be able to continue playing live orchestral music. There's this great quote, Benjamin Britten, the British composer, spoke in front of Parliament, and he said kind of the same thing that John Philip Sousa said before Congress back when Edison wanted to release the record player, that if you release the record player, you will destroy music making in the home. People will stop making music and they'll just listen, and that's different. You know, you won't have to take piano lessons. You won't have to learn how to play an instrument because you can just listen to music. That's different.
Yeah, and Plato felt the same way about books. He was like, we don't need to write books because then discussions are gone.
That's right, right, when the people stop talking. Well, Benjamin Britten said to Parliament, he said that he worries about a world where you can just turn off Bach's B minor Mass. And think about that for a minute. Before 1948, the only way to hear one of these big pieces of music was to go hear it live. And an individual couldn't just hit the pause button on a live concert. You had to stay to the end. You couldn't stop it once it started. And now all of a sudden it's going to be in your living room. It's kind of casual now, and you're talking during it, or you're eating dinner while you're listening. And that's just different. It was to us, that's nothing, because that's just everyday life. We play music while we drive the car. But there was a time where you didn't listen to music except for when you were listening to music. You know, and that's all you did. And this idea that you would multitask was a paradigm shift for musicians. It really was a really, really big deal. To us, it doesn't seem like such a big deal. But back in 1948, it was a big, big deal. So anyway, when the record companies did that, they started, in 1948, they started dividing music up into different genres to help them market these new long play records. And one of the genres that they invented was classical music. So back to Wilhelm Furtwängler, the conductor that was in exile in Switzerland. So when he's allowed to come back to Germany, he reads an article in the newspaper about his return. The great, you know, conductor, Wilhelm Furtwängler. Well, he called his manager because he didn't understand a sentence in the article that he read. And he says, the article says the great classical musician Wilhelm Furtwängler will make his return to the Berlin Philharmonic. And Furtwängler's question for his manager was, what's a classical musician? The word had never existed. No one had ever said classical musician. Here was the top of the food chain in the classical music world who had never even heard the term. And now we can't talk about music hardly without having to say, well, it's jazz music, or it's swing music, or it's pop music, or it's country music, or whatever. And it's really kind of silly. So you had all these years of the record industry and the radio industry, you know, dividing these genres up because they thought that it would help people make decisions about what they wanted to listen to, because it would more easily help them identify with different groups of people, back to those four stages that we talked about, you know, in the muted world.
Yeah.
And so the whole idea of genre became the dominant thing in music for 60 years. You know, people who liked country music wouldn't even look for anything else. They only looked to see what's coming out in country music. And they missed out on a whole lot. Well, streaming music kind of did away with that, because now you got your iTunes or your Spotify, and now you can listen to whatever the heck you want to listen to. And you don't have some record label telling you, well, this isn't country. Ah, but then the Beyonce thing happens, and
gets shook up.
Yeah.
So we're down to 4 minutes for the program. We're going to save the last commercial break to the very end of that so that we can go interrupted. The last 4 minutes, sir, all yours.
Well, let's talk about the concert.
Let's talk about the concert.
So Friday night, the Carrollton Jazz Orchestra is going to play at the Carrollton Center for the Arts. That's the hall that's downtown Carrollton. We're going to start at 7:30. You can buy your tickets by calling 770-838-1083 or go to carrolltonarts.org or stop by the Art Center or take a chance and show up and try to buy a ticket. That usually works, but I recommend buying it early because eventually they will sell out. We're going to play some fantastic music. The Carrollton Jazz Orchestra is an incredible band made of incredible musicians who are going to just blow you away. If you haven't heard them, I promise you will love this show. If you don't know if you like jazz or not, come. Give us a shot. Give us a chance to show you that you love this music. It's this interesting mix of structured music where we're playing music off the page and we're all doing this thing that we've rehearsed. And then all of a sudden, it'll break out and just the rhythm section, the piano, the bass, the drums, the guitar, will start kind of playing this riff underneath, and one of the soloists in the band will just go off and just make something up, and it will blow you away. And then the rest of the band feeds off of it. Other soloists will start playing in response to that, and they'll kind of go back and forth in a conversation. And next thing you know, the whole band's coming back in with that structured part again, and it just absolutely blows you away. If you haven't heard it before, come give it a shot. It really is amazing music. You've heard the names. You've heard Count Basie. You've heard Duke Ellington. You've heard Buddy Rich. We're playing music by all these people. It's just really great. Quincy Jones. Yeah, you're going to love the show. And we start at 7:30. You can bring your kids. They will love it. My kids love it. My kids are all jazz aficionados because they've grown up with it. I promise you will not be disappointed. 7:30 Friday night.
Don't miss it. Get your tickets at carrolltonarts.com at the Carrollton Arts Center.
.org.
Thank you very much, Terry. And Terry, thank you so much for taking the time to share this, to teach us something. I always love when you come on because I always learn something. And it's such a cool experience to go back and kind of flesh out the history of this music in the making. Again, Carrollton Jazz Orchestra, 7:30 this Friday at the Center for the Arts. I appreciate you, Terry.
Thank you, Josh.
And thank you to everyone who tuned in with us. We'll see you next time.